previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
Have I been talking about it that much?
Only obsessively.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 8, Episode 26, All That Glitters. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
This episode was really bad and boring. I know we keep saying that, but this is possibly the fewest clips we've ever had, except for maybe the one with Ginger the con artist. That was formerly the shortest one, I think, from season three.
I think
this
that's
might
right.
be shorter.
But even that was like, it was still season three. So yeah. There was like still shit going on. And I think we had at least like 8 clips. And even that seemed
maybe
very few.
Yeah.
We don't have 8 clips this time.
No, other than the intro, we have 4. So let's just remind you, you can purchase an ad on this podcast, $100 for a commercial message, $50 for a personal message. Go to previously.tv/ads for more information. And now our C-plot, shut up, Steve, and shut up, Jill, we said. So over breakfast, Steve gloats to Brandon about fucking Jill 4 times the previous night, fortunately wrapping up his gloating before she actually comes in. He later comes home from work to find that Jill has redecorated his room with a bunch of girly shit. Like, it's straight out of How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days stuff, except I don't think she's trying to lose him.
Yeah. And also, where did she even get, well, who cares?
Well, that's the question. She doesn't live here. She's only visiting. We know that. Like, she went out and bought home decor for a boyfriend's house that she's going to be dating long distance, whatever.
At the Fredericks of Hollywood home store? Okay. Yeah.
So he's terrified that she threw away his autographed Shaquille O'Neal poster, but she only put it away. And when she tells him that she wants to bone on their new satin sheets, he's about it and clappers off the light. It's the 90s. But then goes to work the next day to bitch to Brandon and Janet that Jill stopped fucking to relight candles. And he thinks that Jill is more in love with the idea of being in love than she is with him. Almost like he was more in love with the idea of being in love when he was pursuing her for 3 fucking episodes and keeping her away from Ted. Just saying.
Yeah.
So Janet wants to know why Steve doesn't say something, and he claims he's going to, like he already did about her insistence on calling him Steven instead of Steve, which, of course, is when she shows up calling out to Steven to say she got them tickets to Madame Butterfly, checks that he likes opera because she doesn't want to force him, and he lies that he does, and apparently lied so convincingly about loving the opera that now she wants to take him to the ballet. And when he bitches about this at work, Janet asks again why he doesn't break up with her. He claims there are feelings involved, by which he means she's crazy about him. But Brandon thinks this could be the first time Steve dumps a woman before she can dump him. And Janet can't believe Steve has never broken up with anyone before. But I guess that's right. Other than ghosting crazy Laura in season 4.
And boy, did he pay for that shit.
He sure did. So he says he has, but when challenged, he can't name a time, and finally agrees that he needs to break up with Jill, but he doesn't know how. And poor Janet, who puts up with so much, lets Steve workshop his breakup speech on her, but when he goes to do it, Jill has a 1-month anniversary present for him, which is a photo of her in a heart-shaped frame, and he says he loves it like a coward and hugs her and makes a terrible cute poo face, which is Sarah's current avatar on our Slack.
They are always Steve faces. Yeah, I forget which one it replaced. Some stupid, I think it was the gay panic one from,
oh yeah,
78 right. episodes ago, and yet still somehow in this season.
Yeah. So eventually Jill, not a coward, goes to the beat to break up with Steve because they have nothing in common. And he tries to talk her out of it, and she blows a kiss like a real asshole, which you can also see in the visual aids at previously.tv. Steve can't believe it, but Janet's like, you didn't want to be with her anyway. And he spins out, and she generously says she thinks he is warm and compassionate under it all. He just needs to find a woman who appreciates him for who he is and could be friends with first, and takes his hand as she adds, and then lovers to bum us all out. But Steve gets it and agrees, but that's where they leave it for now. And this feels like it, I mean, I knew it was coming, and yet it still feels like it came out of nowhere. Like nothing really led up to any indication that Janet was attracted to him at all.
Yeah. And why would she be?
Why?
She's Janet. He's Steve.
We have some birthday wishes for Alice.
Alice, an Australian listener with what she describes as, quote, a strange fondness or a pitying care for Tori Spelling, is celebrating her birthday this week, her own birthday, not Tori Spelling's, by giving herself the gift of an Again With This birthday ad.
I love it. So what better time to list five gifts Donna could have given us over the course of the series to date?
Number one, she could have bought some crime scene tape and slung it across the entrance to the Cleavern.
Number two, she could have undercut Brandon's Cesar Chodvez moment at the Donna Martin graduates protest by agreeing to get her diploma over the summer as God and the rules intended.
Seriously. Number three, she could have bumped Brandon off entirely by, quote, letting/getting Evan to shoot him during the TV station hostage crisis.
Oof. Number four, she could have self-soothed when David's stupid trip to New Orleans made her miss her final presentation by shoving him in front of a fire-juggling second line.
Who among us? And number five, finally, she could have just dated Deshaun as dictated by their evident chemistry and lost her virginity to him instead of to vanilla ass.
Ugh, indeed. Alice, all of us at Again With This hope that your birthday brings you all the stuff you've dreamed of.
Happy birthday!
On to the B plot. Val supplements her scheming with bookkeeping. I guess she has a business degree, but that's not the same as an accounting degree. Whatever. Noah gives Donna a tacky diamond bracelet and invites her to move in with him on his boat. Like, if anything, he should ask to move in with her in a home, but whatever. Yeah,
but she'd have to clean out the doodlearium, and that's not happening.
No, it's not. So she can't, she says, because she got burned by David, and she has resolved not to move in with any guy until it's going to be forever. So then Val comes into David's to hear him badly keyboarding and claims she likes what she hears. And he says that's good because he's writing a song for her again. And he's still getting, or I guess for the first time, or trying again because he tried before and he couldn't. But whatever. He's still getting royalties from his Jasper's Law song. LOL. And feels like he's on the right track in life. And Val exposits that she's doing his taxes. What? Before saying she met some hot new filmmaker named Kyle Scott, who is a fan of David somehow and wants to work with him. So David goes to Kyle's office where he learns that Kyle wants David's music not for a film score, but for a commercial for deodorant. And in my notes, I have in all caps, shit, dude, that might pay even more. Commercials fucking pay. Like,
this entire storyline was enraging to me, just for like David's ever shifting principles. Like he'll basically be fine with shoving Jasper out of Jasper's Law. He'll be fine with producing a record for bigots, but then all of a sudden he's like, but I need to, like, you're a working musician. Musicians love to get commercials. They live on them. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's really dumb. Yeah, especially since the last, or two episodes ago, his whole music storyline was like, I have to rediscover the joy of playing just to play. So it's like, you already weren't going to be doing that if you were going to be writing a film score, because that was going to be under certain circumstances. But I feel like all Kyle should have to say here is like, you're going to make fucking bank. Like, do you want to make money? But he doesn't. So Kyle throws David a VHS tape of the visuals, which have already been shot. And David acts all put upon, but takes it and says he'll watch it. And Kyle's like, everyone's got to eat. But like, get into specifics, Kyle. I'm just saying. Anyway. So then Val crashes Kelly and Donna's lunch at the Peach Pit, eyeballing the bracelet and estimating that it cost Noah $10,000 to $20,000.
Sorry. Like, I'm just trying to think of in what universe, like, there's another piece of jewelry coming up that, because it's, like, at least sort of Art Deco-ish, you could see, but like this piece of trash? No way.
Right. So Donna claims not to care what it cost. Val says the cost of a diamond correlates to a man's affection. And Kelly says, that's absurd. What if a guy can't afford diamonds? Calypto.
That's something only you should worry about, Kelly.
Oh, I think someone's a little chilly.
No, unlike you, I'm just curious.
Anyway, I think that you should have it appraised. Get some insurance when this is L.A. I don't know, that seems so shallow.
I know a jeweler. I'll set it up for you.
Well, ladies, I gotta go back to work. Her pimp must have paged her.
I mean, all right. Like, there's been a lot of discussion on our forums at previously.tv about why Tiffany Thiessen ended up leaving the show. And the way that Jenny Garth delivers this line and then, like, her shitty laughter seems to be her and not Kelly. And then Tori Spelling's like, eh, like, is sort of uncomfortable. Like, I really think that these two mean-girled Thiessen, and to the extent that she was like, all right, the writing is so shitty and I don't want to know anyone involved in this, characters or actors, like co-workers, so bye.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was just like, that was just an unbelievably shitty thing for Kelly to say, for the writers to write, and for Jenny Garth to enjoy delivering. Fucking boo show.
Yeah, it's all super gross. But I would also note here, just remember when we continue going through the storyline, who it was that suggested that it get appraised for insurance purposes, because it was not Val.
Insurance. Like,
insurance.
All right, Texas, right. Remember where you're supposed to be from for 5 minutes.
So, oh no, Val's jeweler says that Noah's bracelet is not even cubic zirconia, it is paste. So, guess Donna doesn't need insurance after all. The jeweler generously suggests that Noah might have been misled, but Val smirks that he just might not love Donna as much as he said, and Donna's upset that Val is being so smug about this, which, like, why would you involve Val in this at all? Donna, this is your own fault. But she stomps out past David, who has shown up to yell at Val in clip three.
What do you think I am, Valerie, huh? Some hack musician that's willing to do anything for a buck?
David, I'm sorry. I didn't know, I swear. But what's wrong with doing a commercial?
I don't do armpit music.
We've heard it, and yes, you do.
My brother has some childhood armpit farts that are insulted by even being adjacent to this conversation. Also, shut up, David. Oh, my God. Like, you wish you were a hack musician.
Yeah. That would be a step up. Like, I don't know what he's doing with his days right now, frankly, but he orders her not to do him any more favors. But the next day he's able to come and see her at work and apologize for his shittiness because he's high off his latest Jasper's Law royalty check. And she hopes it's a really big one because he owes $8,300 on his income taxes, which he says he can't afford. His latest check was for like $1,000. Because he didn't set aside enough money from all of his lucre to pay his bills, because, as always, he is really bad with money. On the boat, later, Donna is all silently mournful, getting ready for bed, and Noah tells her not to take the bracelet off yet and gives her a matching, really ugly necklace, and she lets him put it on her, looking even more mournful, as you can see in the visual aids as well, and says he shouldn't have, and he thinks she means she doesn't like them, but she says he doesn't have to buy her jewelry to show her how he feels about her, which, again, this is Val talking. You are letting yourself be influenced because you are dumb.
Yeah.
So Val comes over on a pretext of returning Kelly's sweater to needle Donna about the bracelet. Donna says she didn't say anything to Noah about it and that Noah loves her. Val opens the box on the table and comments that it's more paste, and they fight over the necklace and it falls on the floor, and Donna doesn't notice when Val steps on it and when Donna turns around to flounce off. Val picks it up and leaves with it and comes back later to say she had it appraised and it's also fake, and Donna kicks her out.
Why would you believe her? How would you not notice something shiny falling on the floor? Why did you let her in the first place?
Yep.
Why are you such a simpleton? Why? It's not funny.
I mean, all the way back to why would Kelly give Val her sweater? Anyway.
Yeah, what?
She might have just said that Kelly left it at the house. I can't remember. Who cares? Val comes back to David's to hear him noodling around on his armpit music. Because now he's going to do the commercial so he can pay his taxes. She says there's no shame in making a living. Everyone compromises, but he's not really ready to be okay with that yet. And out at dinner, everyone looking horrible, Donna finally tells Noah about the jewelry appraisal, and he knew. But he said the jewelry was a perfect reflection of the way he feels about her, she says, and they're fake. He's starting to think they're more a reflection about how she feels about him. She asks if he wanted her to move in with him out of convenience, because what could be more convenient than living on a boat with another person? But he gets pissed. She gets choked up, saying she's not the one who gave him something worthless, but uh-oh, his grandmother was dirt poor, and that necklace and bracelet are the only things that she ever gave Noah. Can't appraise sentimental value, I guess. And Donna cries badly, as always. And the next day, puts both pieces in her Barbie hand and goes to the boat to return them. He says he didn't ask for them back, but she can't keep them after what she did. She wants him to know that she never wanted to know how much they were worth and blames Val about the necklace. Donna asks why he didn't tell her about his grandma. He wanted to, but then she didn't want to move in with him, so he didn't want to scare her by telling her what the jewelry meant to him. His grandmother told him to give them to someone he truly loved, which he did, and Donna says now she's ruined everything and cries some more on her way out, saying she didn't care that they were fake.
She also cries weirdly behind that post again.
Yeah.
Like, please, please block these scenes where she's not like holly hobbying around like it's an umbrella. Like, it's so annoying. Oh, she's fucking terrible. I hate her so much.
I mean, just let Noah move into an apartment, because this boat is causing you problems from a number of perspectives. But he stops her from leaving and says he believes her and puts the necklace on her, and she practically climaxes, saying they're more beautiful than real diamonds could ever be, and they kiss. Who cares? In Kyle's office, David plays a bunch of different armpit music options, none of which Kyle likes, and he asks for something more atmospheric. David didn't know that this would be so hard, and Kyle asks what it made him think it would be easy. Like, seriously, this is a real job that people have, and marketing is hard, and take it seriously, idiot. But David has one last sample, and of course, it's the song that was supposed to be for Val, but that's the one that Kyle likes, and David officially sells out. And again, is playing the sped-up version that Kyle requested when Val comes home, which the first several notes of it just sound like Jingle Bells, by the way. Didn't bother to clip it, but it's true. She's disappointed. He says he will write her another one, and she makes him promise never to sell another song that he wrote for her, no matter how much money he's offered. Like, Val, of all people, should get that paper, you know? Like, who cares? She really believes that David is that talented, then he should have a million songs that he could write for her, potentially. Snore. Finally, our A-plot. For some reason, a real journalist wants to work with Brandon, while Kelly's intellectually disabled colleague must endure her friendship. So, as we open, Brandon is nervous about a meeting with someone named Peter Raitt, the hottest journalist in the country, to talk about a new stadium. He thinks Brandon is an expert on this construction, and so does Kelly, since he has been boring her about it. But then she also bitches at him for, she thinks, implying that she's not good at her job or that it's not important or something. And then when she comes down later to tell him his car is blocking her in, she says she'll move it because she knows how valuable his time is. So she, like, later makes it out like he's been pissy at her, but she clearly started it, but whatever. Unfortunately for us all, there is a kid named Chris who has an intellectual disability and is some kind of assistant at the clinic, but maybe not for long because his mother's work schedule has changed and now she can't drive him there for his shifts anymore. And Kelly offers to call the director of the foundation and see if there could be a day job for him there instead. And although Chris's mom is trying to get him out the door so that she won't get fired, now that Kelly is inserting herself, he is refusing to leave until she can find out whether there's a solution. And Chris's mother tells Kelly straight up that she knows Kelly's trying to help, but she isn't. So could she please stop?
Exactly.
And Kelly does shut up, but also promises Chris that everything will be all right. And Chris tells his mother that Kelly will make it all right. And Chris's mom is like, thanks, bitch. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but seriously.
Barely.
Honestly, she really looks like it's so unusual for someone to hate Kelly that it's great when it happens.
Yeah.
Especially when she really deserves it.
Yeah.
So then at lunch, Brandon badly makes conversation about the length of Peter's career and has no good answer for why he's been at his weekly newspaper for some time now, which is like less than a year because it's all been in the season, but whatever. And he hands over all of his binder of research about the stadium that's being planned for an LA football team that may come to the city, which is a stadium he doesn't think taxpayers should have to pay for. And Peter asks if he may take the research for a shared byline. I don't hear any money being offered, but Brandon is a journalistic social climber, so he accepts.
Did you think that this was going in the direction of this guy stealing Brandon's work? I thought Yes. That's what was going to happen.
Yes, I did.
And I am quite relieved that it did not, because there would have been so much self-righteous braying that we were sort of spared, except not really, except it was Kelly. But anyway.
Mm-hmm. So Kelly then goes to Chris's apartment to tell his mother that there's a job for him at the clinic on the day shift. And his mother is like, shouldn't you have asked me first? And Kelly is like, that's what I'm doing. And the mom is concerned about the added pressure on Chris at a busier time of day. But Kelly swears she won't let Chris get overwhelmed, as if she can possibly guarantee that. And so the mother asks Chris if he wants to go and work at the clinic during the day, which he does. And Kelly promises again that everything will be great. And that's three times. So we know she's going to fuck it all up for everybody. And the next day, Kelly walks Chris through filing procedures and he gives her his beloved Zamboni hockey card as a thank you. It's his favorite one. And Brandon makes Kelly come to lunch with him and Peter. And Kelly is a bitch about it. And I kind of don't blame her. But Peter gets to do all the fun stuff, apparently, like go on rich assholes' private jets while Brandon does all the grunt research. And then Kelly pitches them a story about Chris, like, what is the story? And Brandon's like, yeah, that sounds good. And then Peter says it's a little soft for his taste. And then backpedals that it could be fine as a human interest piece. And when Kelly suggests that Brandon and Chris meet, Brandon tries to get out of it because now he's all embarrassed that his cool friend Peter shat on it. And Kelly's like, bye. And Brandon goes after her to try to smooth things over. And she's like, whatever, he didn't want to talk to me. And you were too busy sucking up to notice, which she doesn't get to be right often. But she definitely is here. So accurate.
Yeah, totally. I'm still not sure why she bothered going to a working lunch with these two narbos. But okay.
I mean, I don't know why he asked her, but whatever. So she goes back to work where Chris tries to distract a kid getting a shot and then asks Kelly if that was okay, which she says it was. Chris, get a second opinion. And then a nurse comes over with a bunch of crumpled paper and asks if Chris filed it because she found them in a patient's folders. And he looks to Kelly to defend him, which she does. He says the drawer was full and he didn't know what to do. And the nurse says, you should ask someone. And Kelly takes the blame. Chris says his mother was right, the job is too complicated, and they should fire him, and stomps out, and Kelly tells the nurse it was her fault, and the nurse is like, I assumed. And then Kelly comes home late from work because she was out looking for Chris, finally finding him at the restaurant where his mother works, so thank God. But like, you know, when maybe the time to go after him was like immediately after he left the clinic before he could get lost, but whatever. And she just confirmed that he was there by looking in the window of the restaurant because she didn't have the guts to go and face his mother, which is the right thing to do. She should have been embarrassed. She promised this would all be great, and it's very much not. But somehow this segues to her thinking that she and Brandon are moving in opposite directions. Kind of out of nowhere. She knows he wants a career like Peter's, but that he gave up his great job offer when she got shot, which, like, again, I can't believe that was this season, but it was.
It was
the season premiere of this season. Oh, God.
Has Brandon ever not done whatever he wants to do? Like, if he didn't want to be here, he would just not be here. That's A. B, speaking of things that Brandon wants to do and usually does, but does not do in this scene, I would just like to acknowledge that when she comes in, he is drinking coffee and working, and he uses the handle.
Yeah, he uses a mug handle. You can see proof of this in the visual aids. Very important. It may never happen again.
Yeah, it's true.
So to all of this, he says he loves Kelly, and she says this, clip 4.
I know that you love me, but I also know that you love your work.
Is there something wrong with that?
No, no. It's just painful knowing that you're not happy here with what you're doing.
I never said I was unhappy.
You don't have to, Brandon. It's written all over your face.
I mean, which face? Because he only has two. And this one actually doesn't look that unhappy. So
no. Yeah. But also, like, that's the end of the scene. Like, that's where they leave this conversation. Like, nothing is resolved. Does she stay there that night? Like, we don't know what happens after this. This episode is very poorly written. So the next day, Kelly goes to apologize to Chris's mother, who blames herself for letting Kelly talk her into it.
That's a spirit.
Coming back or not is up to Chris, who's playing a hockey video game. We find out he got into hockey through his brother, who lives in Boston now. There aren't any teams in LA for people who have Chris's disabilities, and his mother doesn't want him to have any more disappointments. So put a pin in that. Kelly is then excited that Peter arranged for Chris to get on the ice with the LA Kings, but she and Brandon are waiting for Peter in a hotel lobby, and he's an hour late to meet them because someone close to the president is about to resign and wants to give Peter an exclusive. And Peter is leaving right now to work on that story, and Brandon and Kelly follow him to ask him about their story, but he has to put it on the back burner. He's sorry about the skating thing, too, and Kelly says they already told Chris he could go, and Peter's like, I owe you one? Like, he doesn't care. And Brandon brays that he can't do this to Chris, and Peter seriously does not give a fuck in clip 5.
You want me to give up the biggest scoop of the year so your retarded friend can go skate?
I think that would be the right thing to do, yeah.
I misjudged you, Brandon. I thought you were a real journalist. I thought you knew about priorities.
Oh, Peter, you idiot.
Don't say it.
I told you so.
Everyone is wrong, frankly.
Yeah. Like, you told him what?
Yeah.
Exactly. That Peter was a butthole? You only don't like Peter because Peter wasn't paying any attention to you, nor should he have. You're of no use to him at this work lunch.
Right.
Fuck you.
Yeah. And, like, it's not Peter's fault that you overpromised things to Chris. Like, all you had to say was, you know, we have a surprise for you. It could be what it ends up being, which we're about to get to, but
well,
anyway.
And do we ever see Chris again?
No.
We don't.
So Brandon and Kelly have to go and give Chris the bad news. He is already sitting outside in his King's jersey, and his mother comes out saying he's been up since 5 a.m. He made them all breakfast to go. Kelly gets right to it, apologizing for everything. Chris reminds her that she promised him. His mother ignores Brandon and Kelly and turns Chris around to bring him back inside and say they'll find something fun to do. And Brandon brays that they're still going to skate because he knows an ice rink owner that will clear the ice for Brandon whenever he wants. What? This is all brand new information, but Chris is mollified. No idea who this ice rink guy is, but he is real and is trading this outing for 6 months free advertising in the Beat. So he's getting the ice resurfaced for them when they arrive. And Chris is super psyched to see the Zamboni in action. And for 6 more months, the rink guy will let them ride on it. And Chris's mom videotapes them, gives her obligatory tertiary character thank you to Kelly for being Chris's hero. And when I said them, yes, Brandon also rides on the Zamboni. And then the rink guy gives Chris a job. Kelly thanks Brandon, and he thanks her back for making him appreciate how good he actually has it at the Beat. What? That's the end. Like, whatever she thinks is going on with their relationship, like, well, we're done talking about it now. Guess everything is fine. The end.
Yeah. And also, since Peter dumped Brandon, I get him. And wasn't there a conversation like 2 episodes ago where it's like, well, maybe it was too soon for us to get back together. And then they're like, shrug, guess not. Okay. Yeah. And just move on to other stories. Like, are you two even fucking again right now? Not that I want to know.
No.
I don't want evidence. You could just like refer to it very quickly.
No, sure don't. But anyway, that's the end. And let us wrap it up by naming our MVP. Chris's mom, who thinks Kelly is bullshit, other than that last scene where she has to, by obligatory, say that Kelly is the best.
Peter, who does not have to do that and thinks Brandon is bullshit, and then is like, literally is like, taxi to these two triflers. Cool. True. Love you.
Least valuable player. Kelly, who thinks she knows better for Chris than Chris's mother.
David, what a stupid shitbag. Just do the commercial. And give the money to a Holocaust remembrance organization while you're up.
Yeah, great point. We have a user submitted challenge.
I scored some amazing stones.
At Cilantro Rose from Twitter asks us to list, in honor of Dave's and my move, 5 ways the show would be different if it took place in Texas. Well, it wouldn't be delicious cumin. It would be delicious cilantro, in honor of your name. That was obvious.
Well, it would be the same in how people pronounced insurance in this episode. But true. I feel like people would be wearing a lot more dresses with cowboy boots instead of micro minis with platform heels.
Yeah, no one would give a shit about hockey. It would be all about the Dallas Cowboys, for sure.
People would park on the road, but their car would be facing the wrong way, and nobody cares, and it would drive me crazy.
Yeah, that's a real thing that happens. On, like, non-major streets, people will just park pointing the wrong way. It's crazy.
It really upsets me on a genuine and base level.
That would drive me fucking nuts as well. What are we up to now?
That makes 4.
All the acts that we have to endure / speculate as to why they got cut out of the show would be country acts.
Yeah, that'll work. That makes 5. We did it.
All right. Yay. Next time on Again With This, the Bev Niner 5th reunion throws Steve and Janet together, throws Andrea under the bus again, and throws any continuity into the garbage as Kelly confronts he who did not use a blanket, even though he was like 3 years ahead of the gang and wouldn't even be there, but okay. You shouldn't even be near our visual aids without UV-rated eye gear. You can find those on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at previously.tv, and you can follow this podcast at AWT90210. I'm Snob Woodward Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Snarl Bernstein, Tara Ariano, and she is on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer, as always, is Zamboni of Closure, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.